City in 1976. And 2 years later, C. Tom Wood, who was then the town chairman of Pleasant Prairie, and I knew Tom because he served on the sheriff's department, approached me and my neighbor, John Thomas, and said, I'd like to have you guys on the park commission, and I want to start a youth co-ed softball league. So that started me, and we went on the park commission, and we did start that program, and it lasted quite a few years, was very successful. Eventually, that turned into the Prairie Family Days, which lasted a few years, and it just kind of petered out a little bit for, I'm not too sure why. But the effort that we put in from the park commission, that was really all we really did, because at the time, the park commission had a budget of $5,000 a year, and that only covered grass cutting. So everything we did, we had to ask people to help volunteer, get this thing going, and do the best we could with what we had, which was not very much. But that evolved into something good, and that was the start.
Well, I remember how popular those Prairie Days celebrations were, and that was a terrific time. And it's that wasn't that long ago, was it? But events like that tend to have a life cycle. Most of them don't go on absolutely forever. So how did you then move to the governance of the entire Magilla, to the board? What prompted you to make that step?
Well, I was appointed by now the new town chairman, Tom Turwell, and asked me to join the Police and Fire Commission. I served on that for 2 years, and during that process, that's when we started to start the incorporation effort. And I was watching that and watching how it was going to evolve, and now we have a new administrator with Mike Polakoff, and that, to me, started looking very interesting on how this is going to evolve into something that, at the time, I thought was going to be pretty good, and as it turned out, it really was. So that was a start. Then in 1989, I put my name on the ballot, and I was fortunate enough to win, and I was on the board, got reelected to the board ever since until my retirement, which is this year.
I didn't realize, I hadn't remembered that you and Mike Polakoff had quite a run together on this. And we had an exit interview with Mike when he left that position, although he's still very much involved in committee type work as you are. You're chair of the Public Works Commission, right?
The Plan Commission, yes.
Public Plan Commission, excuse me. So you haven't exactly retired and forgotten about everybody, but that was really an amazingly exciting period of development these last 25, 30 years. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, about what transpired from the standpoint of history and how it looks to you as you look back, and maybe you'll share with us and our listeners some of the things that you thought were pivotal. It wasn't that long ago that the big issue here in the south side of the county was Kenosha County gobbling up the township of Pleasant Prairie. And that was a very political question, a very important question, lots of development issues behind it. Remind us what that was all about from the standpoint of history, and also how the emotions were running at the time.
Well, the days of when Don Ruck was our town chairman, he started the move to have Pleasant Prairie incorporate. And he entered into some pretty extensive agreements with the city of Kenosha for us to incorporate. We gave the city of Kenosha, I think, around 1,500 acres of land that was on the north side of Highway 50, where Whitecaps is pretty much now and west.
You gave away my house. You gave away my lot.
I think you were one of the people that were involved in this move. that started the incorporation effort of the village. And then it was some contention at the time, because a lot of the residents that were Pleasant Prairie residents were now being moved either into the city or the town of Summers. And it wasn't met with a whole lot of favorability from the people that were being moved, but it's something that we had to do in order for us to move forward. That's when the whole thing started, and when we incorporated then in 1989 with a successful vote from the residents, it just took off from there.
Well, I didn't get back until year 2000, but I kept in touch because I was nearby in Chicago, and it it was really very interesting thing to watch, and I did watch it pretty closely. Now, tell us, what were the hallmarks of that agreement, that 1984 agreement? Why was that so pivotal? Why was that so important to what has happened since? And you know, and there's been tremendous change in this area since then.
Well, the big move on that, the big reason for that was to create our boundaries and make our boundaries permanent. Because prior to that, if we were to remain a township, the city of Kenosha could have kept on annexing land from us and as they grew. So this way, incorporating one incorporated municipality cannot annex land into another incorporated municipality unless there's a mutual agreement on giving up certain parcels of land. So that solidified our boundaries. And from that point forward, now we've set out, and this is where I give Mike Polakoff and Gene Werby Harris all the credit in the world, by coming up with a master plan on how the village is going to develop and where the industrial portions were going to be, where the commercial was going to be, and where the residential was going to be. And also, along with that, there's an enormous amount of open space that we want to maintain that's in conservancy, and it just worked out well. So that's when it all took off, when we incorporated, and then we laid the groundwork. We created our own planning and zoning commission. We have our own plan commission. We did everything that any full-service municipality does, police, fire, everything.
From a countywide perspective, I hadn't really thought about this until we were talking this morning, Mike. It's really quite interesting that because of what was done at that time, you've preserved a kind of lifestyle and ambiance for a portion of the county along the lake that otherwise would not exist. And from the standpoint of the economic development folks, I would think that they would find that very attractive in terms of promoting residential and commercial development. We're talking this morning and reminiscing with Mike Serpy, who has been a leader in the governance of Pleasant Prairie for the last, 35 years or so, Mike?
31 years on a board, but actually involved with the village since 1978.
Quite a public servant, and I have to tell you that I have extremely great deal of admiration for your persistence and the kind of leadership that you've all had in Pleasant Prairie. I don't think I would have the patience to sit on all of those kinds of board meetings. I serve on a lot of boards, but they seem to be a little more fascinating. That's not my wheelhouse. Mike, anything else about that 1984 agreement that was important? I imagine that the laying of utilities and the further development of utilities was probably dependent upon that being settled at one point. Is that correct?
Yes, we eventually entered into an agreement that we would purchase our water for Pleasant Prairie from the city of Kenosha, and they would also take on and our sanitary sewer. So that agreement was in place, and now it was up to us that we start developing. We want to put in place municipal sewer, municipal water, stormwater, and everything else. So when we had meetings, and some of them were rather contentious, people were not really in favor of putting in sewer and water across their property at a pretty significant expense. But as it turned out, it was probably the best thing that we've ever done to create development for the future. We have now water service going out to the industrial park that's probably going to be good for the next, I don't know how many years, and most of the village is serviced by municipal sewer and water, except for little segments in Carroll Beach, the southeastern portion of Carroll Beach. There's no sewer water down there, and a little outlying areas that eventually will be serviced, but right now they're not. But the majority of the village is being serviced by municipal sewer water, and that will allow for good development.
Now, be honest with me. When you were thinking about all this back then, did you and Mike Polakoff envision the scale of development in this period of time? Was it a little bit of a surprise to you, or were you on the mark, do you think?
I think Mike Polakoff gets the credit for the vision that he had for this village. This man is just an amazing, amazing administrator. And I got to be honest with you, Len, when I really was, you know, after years of being involved with the village and Mike as our leader, when he coughed, I got nervous. I said, oh, boy, I hope he doesn't get sick, because he was that instrumental to the future of this and the growth of this village. And a good thing about all of this and moving on to present day, Mike retired, ran for the board and was elected, and we hired a new administrator, Nathan Thiel, who is, I can't say enough good about Nathan. He has great vision. He's an energetic person, and he very intelligent, and he hit the ground running. So, but Mike was a visionary, and he brought on Jean Werby Harris, and she's one of the best, I think, planning and zoning and community development people in the business.
Now, when the village became a village and you moved from a township, you developed a system for having a village board. And how did you decide that it should be a sort of a community-wide election rather like a school board than having wards where, you know, this neighborhood was represented by this person, et cetera? That was a strategic, was it just a mistake, or was it, well, I suspect it was a very strategic decision.
No, it was well thought, Len. When we incorporated, it was decided upon that we would have a 5-person board, and we would run at large. We would not have districts. We talked about that. And when you have districts, you usually have, you know, a representative in one district trying to seek certain things for his district and fighting against the person next to him who wants something for his district. This way we represent everybody in the prairie. At the time, it was only a little over 11,000 people in 1989, so it wasn't that hard to run at large. Now we're at over 20,000, and I still think that's the way we should continue to go, and to run at large and represent everybody and not just your district. So when somebody comes forward, you have to give them an honest look and an honest appraisal of what they're asking for, and make the right decisions.
Well, when I interviewed Mike Polakoff, similarly on his retirement, he felt that that had become a very strategic and important factor in separating Pleasant Prairie from the pack. It has some natural advantages, but planning, he felt, in that way was made a lot easier because of the broader perspective, the lack of myopia on the part of the individuals that make up the board. I wonder if you might elaborate a little, Mike, on how you think that you were at these meetings and you've taken a peek over the line. You've seen how the county board works here for the Kenosha County and how the city common council works. How would you characterize what your experience is of the meetings and the discussions?
Well, when you have a 5-person board, as opposed to, let's say, the county has, like, I don't know, I think it's 21, the city has 17 aldermen. 5 people discussing a topic or to make a decision is a lot easier amongst 5 than it is amongst 17 or 21 or whatever. I'm not going to criticize the county or the city. That's the setup that they have, and they're doing a fine job of handling it. But having 5 people on a board that have pretty much the same vision as each one has for the future of the village is a lot easier to decide going forward than having 17 different opinions and 17 different districts. So yeah, it's a much easier way to govern a municipality with 5 that we have at large, as opposed to 17 in the city that represent districts.
Interestingly, that's the direction that a lot of not-for-profits are moving into. And that is that instead of having a 25 or 30 member board that represents everybody at all in creation, which is not a bad thing, they achieve that diversity in different ways, but they have a board of 5 to 12, 15 at the very most. And the trend is to keep it under 10, odd number under 10, and then create a of listening advisory committees that sound the waters and bring in input and information and have a very active volunteer advisory corps that helps advise the governance but that the actual governance be concentrated to the point where it's possible to make a decision. Very interesting. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit more about that conversion from township to village. That has a number of implications, and I can't remember. I don't think it was successful on the first attempt, was it?
I do think we were successful. I think we were, Atlanta. You know, you're talking 32 years ago.
I may be confusing you with some other township, but how did that happen in terms of the political persuasion and getting that to happen? That must have been a very interesting exercise.
It would not have happened if the city did not agree to come into agreement with the village on how we were going to do this. And that's where the land transaction came in, where we gave the city 1,500 acres on the north side of Pleasant Prairie, and they would not fight our incorporation effort. So that's really how that all, if there's anything else involved in it, I don't recall it, but it's been a long time, but that basically was the big thing. But the city would not fight us if we gave them this amount of land.
As Pleasant Prairie has transitioned from its really totally agrarian early days to a very complex village with enormous amounts of development, what are some of the challenges that you all have overcome that you think were important mileposts along the way? And you might give us a peek at, from your perch as chair of the Plan Commission, what you think some of the challenges are that you've overcome in the interesting new developments. And we're recording this ahead of broadcast, but hardly a month goes by when we don't see a new announcement about a major step in progress with development on the west side of the interstate.
Well, when we first became a village and we had our own planning and zoning, and there was a lot of interest, we created the Lakeview Corporate Park with the help of Dick Abdu and Joe Andrea writing that holding company bill that allowed us to develop the Lakeview Corporate Park, which is now our industrial park. And then that was fine. But then with that, you're going to create jobs, and with jobs, people are going to want housing. And that's where some of the rub came in on some of these. Some of the existing residents, we don't know if we want this big subdivision going next to us, and it's not going to be the same traffic, and you know how that goes with added students to school districts and everything else. But as we developed and we showed how well it was planned out, and then people started seeing that, then I think the confidence of the people changed and had a lot of confidence in the decisions that the board and the administration was making. And it was nice-looking subdivisions, open space, a lot of open land areas, conservancy areas protected. And that really helped us along, and just a well-planned village with our industrial and our commercial and our residential is kind of almost equal. So we have a real good tax base, a real stable tax base, and that's coming. Everybody sees that now, and I think they appreciate that.
I would think that was a very key piece in the longer run as people stepped back and look at what was happening, because without that tax base, you would not be able to provide the services that you're providing. The development has been rather on the attractive side in Pleasant Prairie. You can see that if you drive down Highway 50 and look at what's on either side of the road in some places. How did that happen? How the standards, the aesthetic standards of development not only appear to be higher, but I understand from developers I've talked to, they are higher. Can you talk about that a little bit and the philosophy behind it, Mike?
Sure. I'm going to give the majority of the credit to our community development director, Jean Werby Harris. She was one that knows what she wanted, knows how she wanted it to look, and she convinced the board, the plan commission, and the administrative staff that this is the way to go. And she's a tough girl to deal with. I can't tell you. She can say no when appropriate faster than anybody I know. And we had developers coming in, they wanted to do this, wanted to do that, and it just did not fit with the vision that we had for this village. And Gene would let them know. So I give Gene and a lot of credit, and I give Mike Polakoff a lot of credit as well. And now Nathan is carrying the torch on that as we speak. But Gene Werby Harris gets the majority of that credit on how this village looks and how it's being laid out, because she has a great vision for how things are to be planned.
I suspect that has an impact on not only residential visitors who want to live in Pleasant Prairie or will now consider living in Pleasant Prairie after they visit, but also on attracting many kinds of businesses that want to be associated brand-wise with a certain appearance and quality.
That's very true, and I can add one more thing to that. A lot of the businesses that landed in Pleasant Prairie made the decision to come here because of the Recplex. The Recplex was a thought of Mike Polakoff's, and it went from 168,000 square feet to now over 300,000 square feet, Olympic-sized pool, two NHL hockey rinks, a workout room, a 60,000 square foot field house. That was Mike's vision, and people, even residents, have said, we want to come here because of that facility. They can go there, work out. And the nice thing about the Recplex right now, Len, it's not supported by any taxpayer money. It's membership supported.
It's terrific. I think it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen done in that kind of a way. And I have a lot of credit to give to all of you for that planning. I think it's magnificent. I've been there. I've toured every bit of it. It's really an amazing facility. And the fact, the important fact that it contributes to the life of the community at no cost in the taxes is really quite amazing. And I congratulate you all. We're talking on Community Matters this morning with Mike Serpy, who just recently stepped off the village board of Pleasant Prairie, but still remains very much engaged. And we're talking about the past, the present, and we're going to talk a little bit more in a while about the future of Pleasant Prairie. Carroll Beach, that's where some of the earliest human settlements were of the indigenous peoples of this area. And ever since I was a child, I've heard about stories about people having issues with the lake chopping away at them and flooding. A lot of that has been mitigated in terms of the flooding now in Carroll Beach. I continue to think that that is some of the most valuable property between Milwaukee and Chicago. What do you see ahead for Carroll Beach? Just washing into the lake? Or do you think that Carroll Beach has a future? And what kind of—
I think Carroll Beach is a very, very desirable place to live. The lake, people have to understand that the lake rises and lowers. And I don't know what the ebb and flows are, but at a high, when it was at its highest point, and that's right before we became a village, Mike Polakoff again ensured that we would have to protect Lakeshore Drive or First Avenue, and in doing that, we protected a certain amount of a good amount of homes on the lakeshore. That will have to be continued to be worked on as time goes on, because of the lake, it's rough to keep up with, and it causes a certain amount of erosion that we have to monitor. But the Carroll Beach area, beautiful area, it had a lot of flooding problems in the southern part of Carroll Beach. That has been corrected with our stormwater plan that we put in place. And now the people in that area that were every spring complaining about the flooding, now virtually has gone away. But who knows what the future is going to be when that lake decides to rise again. I can't predict that.
Well, we just have to get people who have the better predictive powers, I guess. We need someone with a good crystal ball. You know, we just don't know, but one thing we can be sure of, that lake will go up and down, and we've lived long enough to see some of our favorite walking paths down at Southport just disappear, haven't we? Mike, You referenced that some of this stuff got pretty emotional, and it involves someone digging a trench and putting a pipe under my land. You're transferring my jurisdiction. I'm worrying about what that's going to do to my taxes and what school I'm sending my kids to or my grandkids to. Any thoughts about how well you handled those things? And I do remember that you all did a lot of process, a lot of talking. And what were the hallmarks of getting through that period without causing irreparable rifts? What do you look back on and what do you maybe remember as being important things to remember for now and the future?
Well, when we came to the agreement of the boundary agreement with the city of Kenosha, and that meant a certain amount of people going to be moved out of Pleasant Prairie, that was handled with face-to-face contact with the residents by our administrator and a couple other people in the administrative staff that explained everything that was going on. I mean, it was not always met with a lot of favorability because people, I mean, you're displacing a person that was a part of one municipality and now it's going to be a part of another. So it was rough. Unfortunately, in order for us to progress and to grow and develop as we have and we continue to grow, that decision had to be made. And some of the roughest decisions were putting sewer and water in front of people's homes and with an assessed value of quite a few thousand dollars. That didn't go very well as either, but as it turned out, the people no longer have to rely on a feeling well. They don't have to rely on a septic system that occasionally would float, and those problems are now put behind us.
I wonder if you could explain to us what's the status and what's going on with the power plant, the now mothballed power plant. Anyone wants the electric generating plant, we have one. And that was a significant core source of revenue. It still is for the time being. Can you explain to our listeners, I think it's very confusing for me and for most of our listeners, what the status of that is and what it means, what it has meant, and what it's going to mean now in the future?
Len, I have to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody in the village could really say what's going to happen to that facility. It's obviously it's not running. We thought they were going to tear it down. Maybe that's still in the plans. I don't know what their plans are. There was talk that they were going to put a solar panel plant in there. They maybe put a gas-fired power plant or just turn into an industrial parcel. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that power plant. So, but the money we were receiving, a little over $1.some million a year, that's disappearing. But the governor had signed a bill that allows us to recoup some of those losses so we can keep things going in the way we have been.
Will the impact on the tax base be lessened because of all the other development you've got going in? It's one thing, one door closes, another one opens. Is that how you look at it from the standpoint of overall finances of the village?
Well, yeah, that's taken into consideration. We have TIF District Number 2 coming on. Is going to be fully paid out in, I think, a year or two, and that's going to be a significant amount of tax money coming into the village coffers. That will certainly help, but at the same time, we're under a zero levy increase, and you know we get this money in, and some of that TIF money has to be shared with the state. We don't get it all, and some has to be put towards lowering the levy. So it's pretty hard to maintain the services that the people are used to when you're at a zero levy increase and you can't hire as many police officers, as many firefighters as you need because if you want it, you're going to have to go to referendum. And referendums sometimes aren't the most popular things to do because they don't always pass.
You've got a lot of retail in Pleasant Prairie and it seems to keep growing. What's going to be the impact of the current closing and I'm sure reduced volume for quite a few months out of this new kind of plague of the COVID-19, Mike?
I really don't know the answer to that, Len. I'm worried. I'm nervous as to what could happen to some of these small businesses. Some may never open again. Some hopefully will open with obviously a certain amount of restriction put on them as far as how many people can congregate in one place, either the restaurants or the retail stores. It's going to be a tough nut to crack. I like to think that we can get back to normal sooner than later, and I'm hopeful, but I think there's going to be a certain amount of damage to be done in the process.
I'm encouraging my friends to support, and I'm trying to support all the local small businesses, especially the family-owned businesses, as long as they can continue to offer me contactless delivery, then I'm on their list to help them out. One of my favorite questions, Mike, I ask people like yourselves is, during the last 31 years, share with me, there's only a few thousand people listening, so you can be honest. What were some of the things that kept you up at night when you were on the board, maybe still keep you up at night when you worry about the future? But in the looking backwards, what were some of the ones that really, when you were clenching your teeth and wondering, am I going to get, is the village going to get through this?
The biggest, the ones that bothered me the most were when we go into a major project in a subdivision, an existing subdivision, for problems such as stormwater. Stormwater problems are, and fixes are 100% on the property owner to pay the assessed value of the repair or the installation of a storm sewer. And those are met with, I mean, my heart goes out to these people. They come to, and they look at us and say, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 assessment, at, you know, is this hard to, it's hard to handle. Those bother me and still bother me a lot. They have to be done. They're going to be better off for it, but to put that assessment on them is difficult. But at the same time, we're flexible. We've lowered our interest rate on if they want to finance through the village. That is 2% above the rate, the federal rate. And also, we give them like 10 years to pay off that assessment. So we try to work with the people as much as we can, but it's still hard to do. And the most troubling one that I had in my history was when the Sheriff's Department was going to try to take over the policing in Pleasant Prairie. That was met with a lot of opposition. I'm glad that we were able to settle our differences. I have a lot of respect for Dave Beth, and we get along very well. His department and our department get along tremendously well, and I'm glad that's behind us.
You have satisfactory interdepartmental communications now with all the new equipment and towers that have been coming in?
With the new equipment and what?
Well, I was wondering whether or not the two different sheriff's departments and the police can communicate better with each other, because there were issues in the past about that, and a lot of new equipment and towers have gone up. I'm wondering if that's all a thing of the past now.
Our police department, led by Chief Smetana, and the Sheriff's Department get along fantastic. They communicate constantly. They work together on things. We have some of our officers involved in units that the Sheriff's Department has. So, yeah, we have a very good relationship, and it's good. I can't complain about it.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the development that's going on out on the west side of I-94. We've got a lot of development going on there. There's been news about it earlier in the month. How does that look to you? And what about that campus, that very interesting campus at Green Bay Road and 165? Things keep popping up there. I've been keeping an eye on it. It's been very interesting to see what's going on. What's happening?
Okay, we'll start with the west side of the I. Let's go back a number of years when people were coming into Wisconsin and entering Wisconsin through I-94. On the west side of the I, we have a couple of bookstores, adult bookstores, and a unsightly military museum. To now, we have U-Line that is the most beautifully maintained piece of property I've ever seen for a company. And now we just approved Monday night the grading and the advancement for Haribo coming in, which is going to be a huge, huge candy manufacturing facility. They're first in North America. And where Haribo is now, that was the property that was purchased by Abbott Laboratories, and they held on to it for a while, and it appeared that nothing was going to happen. So we bought it back from Abbott, and now we have sold off parcels to Haribo and to Freighter, the surgical center, to Nexus has come in. There's a few others online that look like there's some interest. So it's going to be a beautiful development, very classy, and I don't think anybody can complain about it. The one on 165 and 31, that's Freighter, the rehab center, and then Quick Trip is going to be building a gas station, and there's other things that that Mills, SR Mills and his company have plans for development right now. That's still in the works.
Is that going to be all retail space, or are those going to be little maybe office condominiums too? Do you, and services maybe?
The north side of 165 between Green Bay Road and Old Green Bay Road, that's going to be what it is now, and commercial, yes. And east of that, east and south of Green Bay of 165 and east of Old Green Bay Road, that's condos. And now we have assisted living and senior condos going in there. That just was approved the other night at the Plan Commission.
Mike, as we start to draw to a close, I wonder what you see broad brush for the future of Pleasant Prairie. What do you hope to see? What is your vision? What's your dream? And what would you maybe caution your successors about as the village board carries forward?
What I would stress, and what has been stressed to me over the years, we have a master plan in place that's been approved by the board. You stick to that plan, because it's a well-designed plan that's going to cause for development to take place very, very, very nicely for the future, with industrial, with commercial, and residential. Stick to the plan, and Pleasant Prairie is in a high-growth area. We're going to get development, and if development's going to be coming in, we want to make sure that it's the right development, and it's going to be a fit for Pleasant Prairie. And if it's not, then we're going to probably object to supporting it coming forward.
Well, the last census and studies in between, until the next one is in, which will be a bit, certainly show that our area, Kenosha County and Walworth County too, are in for a whale of continued development and commercial, retail, and big jumps in residential development. I wonder if your vision of a future Pleasant Prairie, whether where this plan leads to, is one where there's an equal balance. Do you think you foresee continued emphasis on large open tracts and large lots, and also some more concentrated developments for congregate groups, and for maybe even short four-story apartment, five-story, six-story apartment buildings?
Well, funny you should say that. That's been pretty much a topic of conversation for us. The big lots in certain areas will continue, but there's also a push for a little bit smaller lots, a little bit more high density in certain areas. As far as the multi-story apartments and condos, that will probably be in the future downtown of Pleasant Prairie. That's going to develop west of 39th Avenue and Springbrook Road in that area. When that develops, it's going to have to start out with rooftops first, and then we're working with a great company out of Milwaukee, Rinka Associates, and they're putting together a plan for us that's looking terrific. And we have a citizens group that was very much involved in its planning. And when this thing starts, which I think is going to start very soon, it's going to be very, very nice. And it's the kind of development that when people visit it and leave, we want them to say, we can't wait to come back. So that's what our hope is, and we also have to continue to make sure we stick to the plan and maintain a good tax base and provide great services.
How long do you think that plan can last? Do you expect that last to, in terms of every plan has a lifespan, and at some point conditions progress to such a point that you need to say it needs to be tweaked a little bit, or one piece rethought or in light of new developments. Do you think that's going to happen soon or rather later? Where do you see that inflection point coming?
The master plan itself basically is in place, but it's always being tweaked here and there for whatever reason. And when you set this thing, when this thing was set up like 25 years ago, you know, who could envision what was happening in 2020? So yeah, the plan itself is subject to being tweaked. Will it be a major overhaul? I highly doubt it.
The village certainly has been an amazing leader in this. And I wonder, don't you have other people coming to you and asking how you've done what you've done? It's what seems to us, just to live around here, to be a real model.
People compliment people of the village all the time about how great this is developing. And I have to give the credit to what Mike Polakoff put together years ago with his staff, with Gene Werby Harris, with our assessor, Rocco Vita, I mean, and our finance director, Kathy Gessel. I mean, these people are I don't know of anywhere that can match the department head's quality that Pleasant Prairie offers. And that was put together by Mike, and it's continued to this day with our new administrator, Nathan Thiel.
That's really great. Thank you, Mike. Thank you to Mike Serpy, the recently retired Pleasant Prairie Village board member. Thanks for sharing with us. Your insights and memories are great. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed, get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.